Hello and welcome to the IMI's Talking Points podcast. My name's James Skoltok, IMI MotorPro editor. Joining me in this episode is Steve Whitten, founder of Men Able, an organisation that works with firms in the automotive sector to drive changing culture, opening up discussions about mental health. So yeah, a bit of background. So specifically, I wanted to do a piece on mental health and well-being anyway, but now felt like a really good time to do it because this month, this season can be quite a tough time for people. So I thought it'd be a good time to have a continuation of the conversation, basically. I was reading automotive charity Ben's latest health and well-being survey report from this year, and there was a very big number in it that stuck out like a sore thumb, and it was that 99% of automotive workers were personally affected by a health and well-being issue in the past 12 months, which blew my mind. I'll be honest with you, I knew that both in automotive and outside of automotive, this is something that is a big issue and we need to deal with, but I hadn't quite grasped how big of an issue it was specifically within automotive. So with that in mind, I would really like to get your input and your thoughts on why is it such a big issue for automotive specifically?
Well, I think first and foremost, mental health is the responsibility of each of us as individuals. It's our own responsibility, but, and this is a big but, in the automotive industry, we have had a legacy of not having a culture that's necessarily open, understanding, dare I say caring, empathetic, compassionate, you know, however many more descriptive words you can think of. But if I think about, you know, the origins of why I started Men Able, my background, you know, the point for that for me was, you know, I had some mental health issues and problems. They were my own causing, right? It was my own reasons that these things came up. But working in the automotive industry, you know, there were contributory factors, and it was about the culture. It was about the working practice. It was about the hours I was working, the stress I was under, the targets that I was aiming to achieve, the lack of understanding, the lack of anywhere to go and talk to people, the lack of an open culture where it was okay to say, look, boss, you know, I'm not feeling it today. I need to take some time out. So I think, you know, I think collectively as an industry, we've got a big, big job to do around all of that.
Yeah. I think typically when people think about mental health and well-being, they think about enormous problems. They think about, is this person having suicidal tendencies, for example? Whereas it doesn't have to be that huge. It can be, and I don't want to belittle it, but it could be something about just feeling stressed or having poor sleep, for example, or a lower mood. Now, I was going to ask, are those smaller issues easier to deal with than the larger issues, as I mentioned?
Yeah, I think the interesting point about the 99% that you talked about is that, you know, a good proportion of those people are going to be in the phase of what we would call pre-therapy. So they're not necessarily people that are, you know, hitting a crisis point and are going to need some intervention. You know, this is reflective of the stress levels and the anxiety and the uncertainty and everything that's going around the industry. And, you know, we all know about all the changes and stuff that's coming our way that we can sort of see are on the horizon. But what we've done over the last year is to change the language from mental health to now talk about mental wealth.
Okay.
Because I think you're right. I think what we see, and I do workshops on this now with managers, and I get them to, you know, list out all the words you think of when you think of mental health. And they typically say stress, anxiety, depression, dark thoughts, you know, can't cope, all of that stuff that you think, wow. Now, if I ran a business or I was a manager, I'd be thinking to myself, well, those things aren't my responsibility. They're not, you know, if people are suffering with that, well, I can be understanding and supportive, but ultimately, you know, I've got a business to run. That's not my area. Hence why, you know, we do need to rely on the intervention of charities that do look out for people in that way.
Yeah.
But when we come across the other side of the page and say, well, now list the words that you think of, if we talk about mental wealth.
Yeah.
And they all go, well, that's about growth, and that's about support and understanding and self-care and empathy and, you know, just being the best version of yourself. And it's transformative, because it makes managers and leaders then go, oh, okay, you know, the word wealth, for a start, gets their attention, because ultimately that's what our industry thrives on, right? Which is that whole thing about growth and, you know, results and so on. So to use a word like wealth and to attach that to people's well-being is now starting to get people going, oh, yeah, actually, yeah, no, I can completely get that. And that is about then having the support infrastructure and the mechanisms, making sure we've got the right people around us.
Yeah.
And having fun as well. Yeah. You know, let's not hide that. You know, there's got to be about joy and having fun.
Yeah. Is that then part of the solution then? I guess it's a bit of a language change, an approach change, to make people realize that they can still achieve the end goal. It just from a different direction, perhaps.
Exactly. I mean, yes, it's having an effect. Definitely. I mean, we're working with a number of organizations where they're shifting that language. They're incorporating that approach and those kind of words into their one-to-one reviews. They're using our rev counter analogy, which we introduced right from day one, which was, you know, instead of saying to people, how are you, you know, ask them how they're revving, you know, and draw the comparison between a traditional petrol engine's rev counter. You know, you wouldn't drive that engine with it revving in the red zone all the time, because that engine ain't going to last you very long.
Yeah.
So, no, why do we do that with people? Why do we allow people to drive themselves like that? So asking where they're revving gives you a good indicator of where they are.
Yeah, and I guess that's important, isn't it? Going back to what I mentioned before, sort of the split of and the range of topics that mental health and wellbeing covers, you may only be feeling worn out now, which is fairly low down in the rev range of your analogy, but that can build, can't it? And other issues can creep in, and you need to start helping people before you hit the limiter, hit the red zone.
100%. I mean, that's why I make the reference about the, you know, the 99% not being at the therapy stage. Because what we need to be doing collectively as an industry and all parties concerned working together to create preventative and proactive strategies. That is going to involve, you know, maybe training managers and leaders in you know, well, what conversation should I be having? You know, I've seen examples early on of, oh, well, we don't talk about mental health here because we don't want to open up a can of worms. But, you know, there's a poster on the toilet with a phone number on it that they can ring if they've got a problem. Well, that's not good enough.
You
know, that's you need to be I want people to be the person that I needed when things weren't going well for me. And that wasn't somebody else at a distance. I wanted to be able to sit and talk to my boss and my peers and the people around me and have an open and honest conversation and know that I'm not going to be judged. I'm not going to be seen as weak. I'm not going to have assumptions made about me, that I'm just going to be looked after, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. You know, it definitely does. So Ben, for example, they offer a lot of services as a charity. To try and help with mental health and well-being. And hopefully people are aware that they can get in touch with them if they do need assistance or know someone who does. With Menable, what is your approach to this area then? How are you looking to try and help businesses and individuals to address this issue?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, you know, we're as supportive as we can be of Ben and any other charities in this area as well. Because as you say, they do a fantastic job. You know, they've seen a huge increase in the requirement for their services. And I suppose the key difference for us is our approach is about being proactive and doing more preventative stuff. So it's working with organizations that recognize that, look, this isn't an overnight thing, and there still are going to be people who won't want to talk about it but would prefer to reach out and get help privately and you know, or secretly, if you like. And that's absolutely spot on. But what we're doing with organizations is we're gradually drip feeding a toolkit of preventative measures that are, you know, that are proactive and are relatable as well. So, for example, we've recently put some stuff out around many elements of the industry have gone down the route of putting people through a mental health first aider course. And, you know, that's great. It's a fabulous course. It's a real eye opener. And it's absolutely brilliant that we've got people doing that. But in talking openly and honestly with a number of people across the industry, what we've had is a tendency to put the people who put their hands up on that course. And let's take it to the extreme. If that's 19-year-old Jessica that works on reception and she wants to go and do a mental health first aid course, brilliant. Let's send her on it. But when she comes back and we announce that she's a mental health first aider, is 55-year-old Barry in the parts department who has kept his mental health problems to himself for the last 30 years, is he going to suddenly go and confide in Jessica? And do we have to wait until Barry has a crisis before he then sits and, you know, cries on the shoulder of this young colleague? And for me, I'm just thinking, let's relate that back to the businesses that we're dealing with here. And that's not workable.
Yeah.
That's not workable. So let's create something where we go, actually, Jessica's job now as a mental health first aider is to be an ambassador and an advocate for creating psychologically safe spaces to feed back proactively to the management team and to be a barometer for what's going on in that business. And, you know, and gradually create more and more advocates. And in that program that we've done, we recently put out a program called So You're a Mental Health First Aider, So What? And we had 25 people come on that on the last one, and they were all like, yeah, that's great, we've been on the course, but now we don't know what we're supposed to do. And so they're sharing best practice with each other. They're starting to talk to each other and, you know, across groups as well, across different companies. And so we're seeing subtle little changes there, if you know what I mean. To gradually and hopefully between us and Ben and everyone else involved, that we can get that 99% gradually knocked down to, you know, the kind of level that it should be.
Yeah. How much of that is, I know we mentioned before about the change of language and tone, for example, but how much of the challenge is just about the types of people that work in automotive space? And we know we need it to change and bring in more youngsters and a broader spectrum of society. But typically, at the moment at least, automotive workers tend to be older and male. And they're the people that actually tend to suffer from this the most, aren't they? So how do we actually get them to either open themselves up if they are having an issue, or if you are kind of aware that somebody might be having an issue, get them to themselves open up and ask somebody else if they're okay?
Yeah, it's a fascinating question, and it's a really, really good point. And I think this is completely what our mission is about. You know, we work closely with Julia Muir at the 30% Club. You know, she's on a mission to create a much better balanced gender diversity across our industry. But, you know, and there's a challenge there with that as well. And I've said, you know, many times that actually, if we want to achieve a great level of diversity and inclusion in our industry, one of the areas we've got to be open and honest about is men's mental health.
Yeah.
Because we are a male-dominated industry, as you said. I'm the archetypal sort of, you know, short, chubby, bald bloke in my 50s. You know, you take a if I take a selfie at a conference, it's like a picture of one of those Where's Wally pictures, you know, everyone behind me looks the same as me. And, you know, we can chuckle about that and all the rest, but you're right, it comes with the challenge that actually we were never brought up to share our emotions or our feelings. And that's my point about Barry in the parts department. You know, we've had a lifetime of, oh, just suck it up, you know, grow a pair, you be a big boy, big boys don't cry and all that. You know, that's the generation that we came from. But I think that is changing. And what I've found is that originally we used to say, oh, you know, men don't talk about their mental health. Actually, they do. But they need, in order to talk about their mental health, they need a safe space to do it. And they need to know that they're going to do that without being judged. Now, interestingly, as a similar on a similar vein, I was at the IAAF awards, and you know, 600 people in there, very male dominated audience, and the after dinner entertainment was Tom Allen, you know, who's a young, very vocal gay comedian. Yeah. And he talks openly about, you know, makes a lot of jokes about being gay and what that means and so on. Mm. And he pointed out the fact that in the audience was, you know, quite a few men that were sitting there with their arms folded, looking away, going, I don't want to engage in this.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, again, just another example of that. That's come from that sort of those generations of, whoa, hang on a minute. If this is off that sort of beaten track of that sort of center line of, you know, straight heterosexual male that's, you know, goes into certain types of work or whatever. Mm. And by the way, we don't talk about our emotions or our feelings. We just get on with it and we achieve the results.
Yeah.
You know, you put all of that into the pot and you go, yeah, we do have a problem, don't we?
Yeah. So how much of the emphasis needs to be placed on business owners then to, I guess, one, change the culture within their business so if people feel safer and more able to open up, but also for them to create those safe spaces where people are able to say, I've got a problem, I need some help?
Well, I think the key thing there is it's got to start somewhere. And, you know, ultimately, you know, if you're an owner of a business, it's kind of your responsibility, you know, it's on your watch. You know, and yeah, I mean, I had people in the early days who said, oh, you know, if we start talking about this, then, you know, people will start swinging the lead and playing the mental health card. Yeah. And, you know, one of our great advocates who's, I'm going to give him a shout out actually, is Chris Wiseman at Wessex Garages. Mm. You know, he heard me say on another podcast that, well, actually, if your response is, you know, I don't want to talk about this because it's going to open a can of worms, just stop a minute and think about what does that say about your culture?
Yeah.
And Chris phoned me and he went, wow, that really resonated with me. And I said, well, you know, I really stand by that because, you know, if we're not going to allow people the space to talk about it and be open, then, you know, what does it say about the kind of business that we run, you know, and who we are as individuals?
Yeah.
But having said that, what I do see is a lot of change happening very gradually and very, you know, very determinedly. That's a word. that is, you know, starting to get this moving. And I think between all of us and, you know, you guys featuring this subject on podcasts like this and so on, you know, really do make a massive difference in raising the awareness.
Mm.
But it's still incumbent on leaders and managers to create that safe space. And this is why we've changed the language that we use anyway.
Yeah. And are you seeing much change? Obviously, you know, you, Menable and you give keynote talks, workshops, you've got health, wellbeing health checks as well and support programs. Are you slowly starting to see improvements and an increasing amount of openness and acceptance of this?
Yeah, we are, because I think what we're also doing is giving leaders and managers the space to say, well, yeah, actually, you know, I'm a leader or I'm a manager, but I'm one of that 99% as well.
Yeah.
You know, and they're starting to support and help each other. And, you know, we've got our Wellbeing Winners program that we're working on, which is, you know, really sort of making a big difference in terms of us going in and doing an initial assessment, not from a critical or an audit point of view, because no one likes audits, but going in there and saying, right, let's look at five kind of key areas across your business and see how you're actually doing.
Yeah.
And let's open up some questions. And it's causing them to kind of look at the ceiling and reflect and think, oh, yeah, actually, it's a really good point.
Mm.
You know, we talk about, oh, yeah, our culture's great, but we've got 41% staff turnover.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we say, oh, yeah, we've got, you know, one-to-ones is written into our, or well-being's written into our one-to-one reviews. Okay, so how consistent are they? Oh, yeah, well, you know, our service manager's brilliant at them, but the sales manager's always too busy and never gets to do it. Well, So you haven't got consistency then.
Yeah.
And why is that? And then when you delve a bit deeper, that's what, back to the point of, you know, you get a different sort of story from each of the leaders and the managers, and that's where we can then support them and say, well, you know, has anyone ever trained you on this? Has anyone ever really given you, you know, the space to do this stuff yourself?
Mm. Yeah.
But we are, you know, we are definitely gradually seeing some change there, and I'm just pleasing to hear, you know, people saying to me that, oh yeah, we use the rev counter all the time. You know, we never ask anyone how are you anymore.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. So
I'm not quite at a my work here is done yet.
No, I guess that would be a fantastic goal, but yeah, difficult to achieve, I'd imagine. Yeah.
Exactly.
But obviously you can't force someone to open up. That is unfortunately down to them, and you hope that if you lay the foundations, they'll feel more able to. But if you were to give advice to someone who is interested and has looked at this and thought, actually, this is something I need to do, what tips or advice would you give them in how to create those safe spaces and environments where people feel comfortable enough to share their anxieties and their difficulties?
I think it varies. I mean, a lot of this rides on, you know, things like cultural upbringing and, you know, background and education and all of that. I think if you're a leader or a manager in our industry, you know, particularly a business owner, and you've got, you know, direct responsibility for the people that you employ, you know, this is increasingly a key part of your overall well-being, health and safety strategy. In fact, even what they call the Department for Health and Safety. I can't remember. I've got a brain fog there for a minute. The Health and Safety Exec, that's the ones. Even they, you know, have a set of criteria now, which is around, you know, how do we look after people? What does our well-being look like? And is there psychological safety? Obviously, that's the sort of stuff we can help with if anyone's really interested in that. But it really does start with a commitment, really, or, you know, at the very least, a statement of intent. You know, let's do something with it. Let's go beyond, you know, putting a poster up somewhere and says, you know, if you've got a problem, ring this number, and actually now start having real meaningful conversations. And there's loads of bodies out there that would be very, very happy to get involved in helping facilitate that. And I think that's where it starts. And I think gradually what we're seeing now is that gradually that message is drip feeding down through a business, but it's doing so with intent.
Yeah.
You know, not just it's a flavor of the month, or just where, you know, it's doing it consistently, you know, on and on and on every time.
Yeah.
And over a period of time, people are now starting to go, oh, okay, yeah, all right, I get this. Mm. Yeah, I'm seeing a change in the individual. I'm around the right people. I feel comfortable to open up.
Yeah. And for people who, you know, you mentioned that some people, the mere mention of mental health and well-being, and they turn around and might say, oh, don't want to open that can of worms. It could be difficult to convince them otherwise, but if you were to try and, because for one thing, I guess it could feel really daunting, you know, if someone does open up to me, how on earth do I deal with that? And then what would you say to them to make them at least begin the journey to wanting to be that person that someone could come to?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head with that there itself. I mean, it's about, you know, wanting to be the person that, you know, offers that help and support. And most of our key advocates, the people who, you know, we work with, actually, when we get involved in those organizations, it becomes evident fairly quickly that even the CEOs and the managing directors are not immune to having had mental health problems of some description. It's probably, you know, I'll go back to one of the things we said right at the very beginning of our journey, which is that let's make a distinction between mental health and mental illness. So, you know, mental illness affects many people, and that requires medical intervention and medical diagnosis. mental health is what we all have, just as we all have physical health.
Hmm.
You know, as I said to you, my voice is a bit huskier today because I was abusing my voice last night on an awards show I was doing. But, you know, so I'm very aware that my physical health in that respect isn't where it normally is. Mm. But on the other hand, my mental health has had a massive boost because it was massively uplifting and it was a good session. So,
yeah.
But it's recognizing that mental health and physical health is something that we all have.
Yeah.
Mental illness is something else.
Yeah.
And okay. I think it's that wanting to, that desire to want to talk about it.
Mm. And I mentioned it before, but as someone who might be struggling then, you know, you might feel a little bit nervous, hesitant,
mm-hmm.
Unsure how to go about opening up. And you might realize that you have an issue, but it's just taking that next step, overcoming that next hurdle to actually tell someone else about it. So for someone in that position, especially in our industry, which can be fairly, as you've said, you know, just get on with it and forget about it. What brutal. Advice would you give to them?
Well, I mean, it's again, you know, I go back to the work that we're doing with organizations. And, you know, whilst I said about the posters on the wall with a phone number on, you know, that's a really important thing to have. You know, we still need to have that obvious level of awareness across the business that, look, if you're not okay, if things aren't right, then, you know, here's somebody you can call on. But for me, that needs to fit as part of an overall strategy that is generally on the kind of, actually, let's invest in the mental wealth of our people. Because when people feel good about themselves, they perform well.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately that's what we're about. So I think it's, you know, it's about not doing those bits that we've been doing in isolation. So as an example, we're talking to a dealer group at the moment and they want some help in terms of, well, you know, how do we piece together our well-being strategy? Because it doesn't quite feel joined up. Yeah. You know, we've done all these different things and we've got posters, we've got mental health first aiders and we do this and we do that, but it doesn't quite feel like it's landing. And so, you know, even that in itself is sort of clear indication that there's a commitment from that organization to go, yeah, we really want to address this. And within that, you're right, there will be people who will be like, oh, I'm not talking about my mental health. And, you know, I don't even think I've got mental health problems. I'm just stressed. I'm just anxious. I just haven't got, I'm not earning enough, or I just drink too much, or I eat too much, or whatever. And in those cases, then, yeah, we need, you know, places for them to turn and places for them to get help and support if they need it. I think my point there is just making sure that we're absolutely clear that, look, wherever you are on that scale, we're here to support you.
Yeah. And just, And just finally then, are we on the right track? Is there positivity to be had that we are, I know we'll never get to 100% of people being completely okay, but are we on the right track in terms of the automotive industry knows this is an issue and is trying to make adjustments to make things better?
Do you know what? I'd go as far. Yeah, I think we are. I genuinely think we are. I think I look around at other organisations and, you know, I mean, there's a fairly famous one that are well known for having ping pong tables and bean bags and let's all go and get a haircut at 11 o'clock in the morning, you know. But that organization also expects blood from their employees.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, let's get this right, guys. You know, I mean, we're a good industry. Mm. We've got some fantastic people. We've got some lovely, exciting things happening. And I genuinely think we are moving in the right direction. I think the fact that, I mean, I feel for Ben because they're inundated with, you know, people reaching out to them. But I think the fact that that is happening actually says that we have all done a good job in raising awareness, in creating a bit of education and making space for people to have a conversation.
Mm.
3 years ago when we first kicked off, you know, somebody said to me, well, the problem you've got, Steve, is you're going to an industry with a solution to a problem that it doesn't perceive it's got.
Yeah.
And that's always stayed with me. And I think, actually, that's a really good point. But as we've progressed over the last couple of years, I'm like, Yeah, I think we're getting there. I think, you know, I wouldn't want to put a number on it, but I certainly think, you know, the conversations I'm having, people saying to me, oh, you know, we're seeing what's going on and, you know, this is all good stuff and heading in the right direction. I genuinely think we are moving in the right way. Whether it's quick enough, whether we'll see an instant result, you know, soon, or who knows?
Yeah,
that's down to the people, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, like so many topics, this isn't something where you find a silver bullet, there's a solution, and then you can forget about it. It's a continuous conversation, isn't it? And you build and you build and you build.
Yeah, and there's another aspect to that as well, is the fact that obviously if we want to attract a younger, more diverse generation into our business, into our industry, we have to have proper well-being provision because they expect it.
Mm.
You know, for my generation, mental health conversations was a nice to have.
Yeah.
For those younger people coming in, it's an expectation.
Hmm. So I guess given enough time anyway, it will simply become part of company or industry culture, won't it?
Yeah.
Which is probably a long time coming and much needed as well.
Yeehaw.
But it's been brilliant talking to you. Thank you very much for answering my questions. We've covered a lot of ground, but is there anything that you think we may have missed or you wanted to add?
No, as I say, I think, you know, lots of us, you know, us, Ben, various other charities and people that are out there, you know, we're all aiming for the same thing. And that is the overall sort of well-being of everyone that works in the industry. We have a thing where any organization we work with, you know, I make a point of saying to the CEO, who asks you how you are? Most of them say, oh, actually, no one does because I'm the CEO.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, the point is we're all gradually just kind of getting there. But if anyone wants any help or support, you know, we can be reached. I'm sure you're going to put some contact details out there. And, you know, we'd love to have a conversation with anyone across the industry who feels that, you know, we could help them out in any way.
Mental health and well-being is an incredibly important topic and one that we will no doubt be coming back to. I hope you found the discussion interesting. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join us for the next episode.